all across Wisconsin from Civic Media. This is Up North News Radio. Real information, good conversation. Unabashedly Wisconsin. Here's the founding editor of Up North News, Pat Kreitlow.
Well, hey there, Wisconsin. Good morning. Welcome to the State of Wisconsin Sense. It's another beautiful day on Lake Wissota as we start 2023 already. And this is where people of my age make the obligatory joke about not putting the wrong date in your checkbook. And then people younger than us say, what's a checkbook? So with that in mind, I say good morning to one of those young whippersnappers, Mr. Aaron Zommers, who's producing for us this morning. Aaron, good morning. Hope you had a good holiday break.
Good morning. I did. I hope you did as well. Also, we know what a checkbook is. We just don't have one.
You don't need one. I still am using a checkbook from, I think, 2015 is when, because it's got the carbon copies. I'm pretty sure the first one in that series. We used to go through those books, you know, all the time because you paid all your bills that way. But that is not the world we live in. So when somebody actually needs a physical check, it's still something that exists, but in very, very rare form. Coming up, we will visit with State Senate Democratic Leader Melissa Agard about the upcoming legislative session. Terry Bell will join us at 7:50 from the newsroom. Kristen Lyerly will join us here at 6:30 at the bottom of this hour. To reach us, radio at upnorthnewswi.com or our phone numbers. The regular Civic Media number is 844-967-2789. And then our special Up North phone number so that we can stay in the 715 is 715-388-7155. Again, my thanks for everyone who made it possible for me to have some time off, although we actually got way more time off than we were planning for a host of reasons. As I look back at the calendar, I lost Thursday and Friday, December 15th and 16th, to illness. Then we lost, then I did a couple of shows from Kalamazoo, Michigan, and then back home for a day. Then we lost December 22nd and 23rd to the blizzard that wasn't, but we were all hunkered down preparing for it. Then last week, I had the week off in order to have some time off that coincided with a couple of my grandsons having a week off of school. And so we just had a blast with them. So that's 9 of the last 12 shows that were lost. And guess what? After having a grandparent vacation last week, I'm going to have a more grown-up vacation next week. So that means we're going to lose 14 of 22 shows. So if you still remember who I am after all of that, come January 16th, we will be back at it full-time, nose to the grindstone, as they say. And we'll get to work on our New Year's resolutions. It's just that mine won't start until January 16th, more or less. So, of course, getting set to come back today after some time off, found myself with some old school, first day of school, insomnia. And I think that might have had something to do with as well with being all, you know, jazzed up from the Packer game, which I know if you're a regular listener, you know, I'd long since kind of written off the Packers. They were 4-8. Like there's no way, nothing's coming back. There's not going to be a postseason, et cetera, et cetera. Well, here we are at 8-8 after those 4 weeks in a row, 4 wins in a row. And if you would have said to me that in week 18 of the NFL season, a matchup with the Detroit Lions would have tremendous playoff implications, I would have said you're crazy, and so would everybody else.
Yeah, I definitely would have as well. I had long since given up on the season, but then yesterday, one of my roommates who is from Colorado, he was visiting there for the holidays, visiting his family, and he just got back yesterday. We picked him up, got home just in time to watch the Packer game. Oh, excuse me. And so we watched it since it was good to have everyone back, and we would keep like looking down to take a drink of, I don't know, I was drinking water. And then we'd look back up, and all of a sudden, they ran the whole field and got a touchdown. We're like, wait, what?
Huh? Yes.
Is this the same team?
It's not. See, that's the whole point. It's not. You know, I watched it at our local watering hole here, which of course was a, you know, had quite the party atmosphere after Keyshawn Nixon, you know, scores on this 105-yard kickoff return. I'm like, who are these guys? And then we get a pick six on top of that, which again, I don't even know. Well, I do know because I saw on screen, it was 1967 was the last time the Packers had a kickoff return and a pick six in the same game, or what was it, the first quarter of a game, something like that. It was, and look, Rodgers was fine. You know, he went 15 of 24 for, you know, just 159 yards. He was still overthrowing the ball. And I'm sorry, I know people want to say maybe it's the young, inexperienced receivers. I'm not with you on that. I still think Rodgers is overthrowing the ball for reasons dealing with his thumb, or that he just didn't take enough time to sync up with his receivers and practice during the early part of the season. So, you know, in that first half, it wasn't that Rodgers was doing anything heroic, but when you have special teams and the defense, you know, working the way that they did, the way that they haven't all season long, well, then you can see where yesterday was just a really nice treat. Unless you were a Vikings fan, of course. I mean, look, their receiver, Justin Jefferson, one catch for 15 yards. I mean, they just did not show up. You know, Cousins did all right, but not great. And so now we end up with the Packers playing Detroit at Lambeau next weekend. We don't know the time because it's all flex scheduling. That'll be determined after tonight's Monday Night Football game. So we'll update you once we know. Let's take a break. More after this. You're up north. Something that reminded me that, yes, we have to talk about Robin Voss yet again as we get back into the swing of Wisconsin news and Wisconsin politics. So we'll get to that in just a second. But to finish up sports from the last segment, the Washington Wizards defeated the shorthanded Milwaukee Bucks on Sunday night, 118-95. The scuffling Bucks played without Giannis, who sat out due to left knee soreness. He is averaging 38 points and just about 15 rebounds over the last six games, which included Friday night's win over the Timberwolves that snapped Milwaukee's four-game losing streak, which came as a surprise to me as somebody who's been out of state for the past week, not realizing the Bucks had gone on this four-game losing streak. But Jrue Holiday also missed the game with an illness, and Chris Middleton sat out his eighth consecutive game due to right knee soreness. So apparently I leave the state for a while, and the Bucks begin to struggle a bit, which is really unfortunate. Coming up about an hour from now, Senator Melissa Agard, the Senate Democratic leader, recall that we spoke to Assembly Democratic leader Greta Neubauer just before the holiday break. We talked to Senator Agard as well, and she will give us the perspective from the state Senate on things as we look ahead to a legislative session that, again, as we've been looking ahead to it, the main thing that, you know, I think matters most to you and everybody else in Wisconsin is that Republicans have been sitting on a $6 billion surplus. What are they going to do with it? Now, legislatures, you know, spending money is nothing new. We do a state budget every 2 years here in Wisconsin, and some very big decisions are made. But frequently they're made from the standpoint of, well, not a deficit, because state budgets can't run a deficit, but there's very rarely a surplus, and there has never been one quite like this. And so this particular session of the legislature does in fact deserve extra attention, because big decisions will be made that could use this surplus for some very good things for the state, or some things that are not nearly as targeted as they could be to the greatest amount of Wisconsinites. So to that end, we turn our attention to the Sunday shows. And over at Capital City Sunday from WKOW, you have A.J. Byatt-Poor talking to Assembly Speaker Robin Voss. Now, before we get into the legislative session, I wanted to play one particular clip because AJ does make note that when Robin Voss was interviewed by the January 6th committee, he mentions that Trump has, you know, told him multiple times that he would like Voss to, you know, do something about the election. He told the January 6th committee that, you know, Trump didn't do anything specific, but as he notes here in this clip from this interview with Capital City Sunday, he knows exactly what it is that Trump wants. So give a listen to this clip of just over a minute.
Janelle had a habit, instead of focusing on what we could get done, she focused on things that clearly were outside our purview, thinking that we were going to overturn the election when that's clearly unconstitutional, thinking that we were somehow going to, you know, go back and relitigate 2020. That made her unfit and unqualified.
Former President Trump also pressured you to overturn the election.
Yeah, he did.
What was it like?
But I beat him.
What was it like? What was it like to have a former president pressuring you to overturn the election and then turn around and openly endorse and rally for your primary opponent?
Well, I hope it shows people that I'm willing to stand up for what I believe in, no matter how high or intense the political pressure is. Look, I think there were problems with the 2020 election. It should have been done differently. We should have reformed it. It didn't happen because of the election. But I'm not going to go back and spend all of my time living in the past. And I feel like that's where some people are.
Do you think the former president committed any crimes related to the 2020 election?
I have no idea. I mean, I do think the January 6th commission is a big witch trial. I mean, you know, they didn't really do very much other than try to make it into a political circus. And I guess it goes right back to what I said earlier, that people are tired. They're tired of everything being political.
No, well, that's not exactly true. It's not that people are tired of things being political. They're tired of a lack of consequences for actions that the January 6th committee has uncovered, a committee which has done historic work in what it has uncovered about the attempted coup, the attempt to overturn a U.S. election. And Voss there puts on a masterclass in trying to have it both ways. As somebody who is not a complete Donald Trump puppet, but at the same time will do whatever is needed for him to keep his job, which is really what you're going to continue to see at the legislative level. You're going to see it from Kevin McCarthy, who still doesn't have the votes to be Speaker of the House, with Republicans taking over the House. And so these are folks that will say anything to just enough people. And that includes, in the case of Voss, you know, removing Janelle Branchen, the Assembly Elections Committee chair, saying that, well, she wants to live in the past. This was a guy who has now confirmed that he spoke to former President Trump at least 10 times in the 2 years following the 2020 presidential election. This in an article from Molly Beck of the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. And again, Trump knows, like any good mob boss, you don't explicitly say, go rob the bank. You say, boy, there's this bank over on the corner. It would be a shame if something happened to it. That's how Trump has always done his bidding and knows well enough to not say the magic words, I'm going to shoot somebody on Fifth Avenue. And then when somebody is shot on Fifth Avenue, he can somewhat truthfully claim that, you know, he never did it. He never ordered something to be done. But for Voss to say, again, to have it both ways, to say, well, Trump was pressuring him, but he never explicitly said to do something. Again, he's trying to cover up from somebody who the January 6th committee has long since established his role in this attempted coup. And Voss is doing neither himself nor the country any favors by continuing to cover up in testimony that, again, Voss originally described as brief before the January 6th committee. But now we know the testimony has been released and it spanned, you know, 42 pages of discussions about how Trump wanted Voss to fix the election. And Voss instead gave us the Michael Gableman investigation, which has cost you and me well over $1 million in taxpayer funds for an investigation that he knew was not ever going to uncover anything. And yet he's still going to say, as he did just there, well, there are these irregularities that need to be looked into. No, there's not. Or something would have come of it by now, and it did not. So getting back to the legislative session and the budget, I thought one of the more one of the more disingenuous things that I think more people are calling Republicans out on is the matter of what to do with local governments, specifically Milwaukee, because they've become such a punching bag, but for local governments overall. Again, recall that when Republicans took power in 2010, they advertised themselves as the party of local control and then proceeded to spend the next decade continuing to remove more and more local control to put it in their own hands and to put the responsibility for taxing people at the local level, you know, passing that responsibility down to them so that, you know, at the state government level, they could look like the ones holding the line on taxes. Well, again, now we have this surplus that perhaps we can use to maintain or even improve on some of the ways that services are provided in Wisconsin. And Voss told A.J. Byatt-Poor that he's open to boosting state funding for local governments, but with reforms, quote unquote. And Voss was pressed for specifics, but he didn't have any. He didn't have anything of substance because they don't. Again, the whole point is just to continue using the state's largest city, the largest cog in the state's economic engine, as this punching bag because it's where most of the Democratic votes are. It's a matter of playing politics with state government rather than trying to govern for an entire state and for an entire state economy. You keep talking about looking for reforms. And that's where I'd really like to see what are these reforms that they talk about. Well, we know the first, you know, and most important one is going to be privatization, which, again, with extremely limited exceptions, if any, it doesn't work. All it does is it ends up costing taxpayers more as private entities come in and do work that used to be considered a public good that our tax dollars would pay for. And instead, a private firm will come in and say, well, you don't need to do that much, or you need to pay us that much more. Services get cut. That's what they're looking for. Because again, we have a party that trashes government for the sake of trashing government and will always put the interest of corporations ahead of the interest of taxpayers every time, because it's the corporations that now can spend virtually unlimited funds to keep those same Republicans in power. So privatization is the one thing that's being put out there. The other is consolidation. Now that one is can be a little different. And others have written about this as well, that there's always room to consider consolidation. In some ways, well, perhaps the best example is any given set of suburbs around a city. And certainly my experience is around the Eau Claire area, where you look at whether, say, you know, Altoona next door can share some services. Up here in Chippewa County, you have multiple different fire departments that for a time there were getting into, you know, some kind of turf battles when taxpayers were saying, wait, do we really need, you know, that many fire departments, or can, again, can you consolidate services that way? Those are things that you can consider, but for a legislature to want to, you know, micromanage that level is completely counter to what Voss and the Republicans say they stand for. You know, when pressed for specifics about shared services, Voss said he didn't want to micromanage. But to A.J. Byatt-Poor's great credit, he then mentioned, well, if you're blocking a city from putting in its own local sales tax, isn't that micromanaging? And look, Voss and others can tap dance all they want, but they know that their position is set because of redistricting, because of gerrymandering, because of the rigged maps. They're not going to change anything unless they have to. The one thing they have to do is pass a state budget by June 30th, in theory. again, if they don't, then services just continue at the same level. There's not an actual government shutdown. So they don't have a big burden to make any big changes unless they hear from you, from their constituents, telling them to get off their butts and make a $6 billion surplus work for local government and state government services. We're going to take a break. Kristen Lyerly will join us next. We'll talk a bit more about the holiday break and other things that we're looking forward to in terms of New Year's resolutions in 2023. Follow what we do at UpNorthNewsWI.com. Sign up for a daily newsletter there. We'll be back with more right after this. You're Up North.
Follow Up North News with our daily newsletter. Go to our website, upnorthnewswi.com, and click newsletter on the top banner. Once again, here's Pat Kreitlow.
It's bad, it's o'clock, yeah, it's 6:30. I've been through a lot, but I'm still flirty.
There's my effort to help wake up Kristen Lyerly and the rest of us on a Monday morning. So happy New Year, Dr. Lyerly.
Good morning. It's bad o'clock and we're still here doing this Monday.
I like that you self-censored yourself on that as well as we were playing the clean version of that song from Lizzo.
Aaron's finger was on the button. He was like, I don't know. Is she going to do it?
No. He and I work very hard. We work very hard to make sure we've got the right music clip here to not put that broadcast license in jeopardy. I would ask if you had a good holiday break, but we have to start with, you know, you being in Green Bay and being, you know, around Lambeau Field yesterday. Probably a fun day for you.
Electric. The whole day. I mean, even before you could tell people's spirits were up, everybody was really looking forward to the possibility, knowing that we had to win. And it was the Vikings. And it was a beautiful January day. So, man, not just the game. I mean, the game was stunning, but the whole day was a wonderful day.
It was. And again, it was a surprising game from a defense and special teams perspective. It's always good, you know, when the Vikings fall on their fannies, which... You know, what did they say? They're the worst, you know, 10, they're the worst 10-7 team, you know, you've ever seen or something like that. And it's true. They've been able to squeak by in a lot of games, and it's nice to watch things fall apart. But, you know, you mentioned how wonderful it was that this was an afternoon game and wasn't a Sunday night game, because otherwise we'd be a train wreck right now.
Oh, the festivities. I noticed, I don't know if you saw this, but at the end of the game, and I wasn't in Lambeau, like in the field, but I was outside, but watching it on TV, nobody left. It was a blowout and nobody, well, all the Vikings fans left, but like none of the Packers fans left because they were having such a great time. And, you know, this was a fun game to watch. You mentioned some of the shenanigans that happened with defense and some of the turnovers and the runbacks. And it was a fun game. It wasn't a technically great game, especially for the Vikings, but it was a really fun game to watch.
Oh, it was. You know, I mentioned earlier that it's not like, you know, Rodgers had this blowout game. It was, you know, special teams and the defense that did a lot of the work, but it was a bit of a party atmosphere. But also part of the reason why not a lot of folks left was the fact that the Vikings had come back from that 33-point deficit
a couple
of weeks earlier. So nobody, every one of us at the local pub, we were all saying how fun this is, but nobody was taking it for granted. We were going to stick around because you didn't know if there was going to be another epic comeback. And thankfully there was not. So now let's get to the holiday break here, because as I mentioned earlier, between illness and weather and holidays and vacations, I mean, we did not get a proper send off on this show to 2022. We kind of went out with a whimper, and so we didn't get to really find out if you had a good Christmas. I know you had to do some road tripping, and how did it all go for you?
It was good. I worked on Christmas, which is what I like to do. Mm-hmm. So that was nice to be, you know, at the hospital and with other people who were spending time away from family, but we knew that we were taking care of our patients, and that was where we needed to be. So that was good. We're actually doing our family Christmas this next weekend. So we are really extending the holiday season this year.
Good. We actually had to fly on Christmas Day morning and then fly back home on New Year's Eve day. And, you know, in between, you're watching all these folks get stranded, especially those poor folks who flew Southwest. And I have to say, we lucked out. We had, you know, great folks on both of the airlines we traveled. And like you mentioned, when you have to work, you know, when we got to the hotel Christmas Day morning in Idaho Falls, I mean, the people there, they couldn't have been nicer because, you know, you're there, you're working anyway. You don't gain anything by being a grouch, you know, on the holidays when you have to work. And it really was, we felt like we got the best parts of travel because, like you, you know, my wife is a doc who sometimes has to work on Christmas or New Year's and sometimes stay in hotels, go to whatever few restaurants are open. And I don't know, I don't think it's just a Midwest thing. I think that for a lot of folks, if they have to work on the holidays, they just try to make the best of it.
Yeah, you have some fun with it. We wore hats, we wore silly hats and sweaters. There was a free meal at the hospital, and our patients were not really excited to be in the hospital either. So for us all to, you know, be together and making the most of it and playing Christmas songs, yeah, it was just really nice.
So we got back, we flew in, you know, New Year's Eve, and we got back here to the house in Chippewa about 11 o'clock Central Time. And we tried to make it till midnight, but we could not. Because it was a day of travel. Really hard. Oh, it was hard. But also, you know what? The New Year, I'm sorry to sound like an old fella, but those New Year's Eve shows, they just don't have the appeal. We flipped around, you know, three of the different shows that were out there. And, you know, we don't go out to bars as much as we used to on New Year's Eve. And we kind of find ourselves going, what are people of our age supposed to do these days? Did you have something to do?
I saw Aaron pull the mic close to it. Aaron, did you want to share something?
I mean, I wanted to say that I think I agree. All the like shows and everything for New Year's Eve, just kind of, they're kind of lame now because of how much social media is everywhere. It's not really anything special anymore to watch the ball drop or have some personality narrating us into the new year.
It's gotten so shiny and glitzy that they've gone like all the way to the other edge and all the meaning is gone. And it's just like for show.
I know what it was. Now we got home in time to turn on the TV at 11:04. So that would have been 4 minutes after the ball dropped in Times Square. And we turned on the TV and the place was already emptying out. People were like miserable because it had been raining in New York all day. So it was kind of this cold rain and it didn't look fun at all. I mean, I have visited Times Square as a tourist. I hear about how if you want to go there for New Year's Eve, like you're basically barricaded in. You can't really go anyplace. You can't imbibe or anything like that. So I don't even know why people would want to do it. I think those people too, much like the TV specials, go, you know, maybe this New Year's Eve thing, maybe it's a little overrated. You know, unless you're putting on a good party. And I've put on and I've been to some good ones. And Kristen, that's what we got to do. We got to come up with next year's New Year's Eve party.
There was one thing, though, that I have to mention. And if you had jumped on the Times Square broadcast a little bit earlier, you would have seen an outstanding performance by Duran Duran.
Once again, Duran Duran represented by Dr. Lyerly. Oh.
They were so much fun. There were some bright spots, but I mean, it's not like in the olden days with Dick Clark where you felt like you were excited about it. Now it's more like, oh, is the ball going to drop already? Because I want to go to bed.
Well, because there are all those different options now. There's not, I mean, it was just you had that. You had Times Square and maybe one other option. And now there's so many other things that we don't have that collective gathering, you know, the way that we do on New Year's Eve. So
you're right.
I did hear though that apparently with the college football game, the Ohio State one, that actually Georgia ended one? at midnight. They put up a side by side of the Times Square clock ticking down just as the Ohio State kicker was going for the game winning field goal and missed it just as the clock was striking, and Ohio State loses to Georgia, so Georgia goes to the national championship. So I guess there was some drama that way, but you know, again, you needed something that wasn't just, you know, a band playing on stage to to give you that sense of excitement. But I didn't watch much. I didn't watch hardly anything for bowl games. The Badger game was, you know, started at what, 9:15 or something like that.
Did you miss the Bad Boy Mowers Pinstripe Bowl where the Gophers beat Syracuse?
You know, I did. I did miss the Bad Boy Mowers Pinstripe Bowl from Yankee Stadium.
I don't get it. What, can you imagine? Like, that's your legacy. You're a player. You're really proud of it. And your kids are just like, hey, Dad, tell me about the time you played in the Bad Boy Mowers Pinstripe Bowl.
What kind of combination of words even is that? I don't understand.
No. And some of them are, there's some that are even worse than that. You know, there's, you know, the something, something meat snacks, you know, bowl or whatever. It's just, it's not what it used to be, said Grandpa yet again. What do you do? Do you do New Year's resolutions? Are they kind of informal or, you know, I know some people, I mean, they sit down as like a family and they write things out and they share and they debate or whatnot. And that's just never been my speed. But what about you? Have you got resolutions?
Oh, I'm a planner and I'm always thinking about the next thing. So I've kind of come to this point in my life where it's no longer about, I want to lose 5 pounds or I want to eat better or, you know, the standard stuff. I have like actionable items.
Ooh, like, actionable items. Go on.
Yeah, but it's not like, you know, your resolutions set you up for failure because as soon as you fall off the wagon, you're like, well, I'm done. That was my resolution. Where's the chocolate? So that's not my thing. Now my thing is like, you know, I need a stronger core. I need to do more Pilates, but I can't say I have to do Pilates every day. I just need to try to squeeze like 10 minutes of Pilates into my life whenever it's reasonable because I can hold myself accountable to that resolution.
That's true.
That's yep. One. I mean, I have a couple others, you know.
Well, and there are, this is the time of year for, you know, all kinds of pithy sayings and such, but, you know, we take it to heart in the beginning. I'm looking at one quote here that somebody posted that said, don't be afraid to start over again. Remember that this time you're not starting from scratch, you're starting from experience. Mm-hmm. And I thought that was pretty nice, but like you said, it's if you set yourself up, you know, to fail, you go, well, that's my experience. My experience is setting resolutions and then failing at them. So looking for something that you can trend at rather than adhere to with some kind of ironclad consistency, you know, is the better way to go.
Mm-hmm. You've got to have a plan or it's just a wish. So maybe, maybe it should be called New Year's plans.
New Year's plans.
Mm-hmm. New Year's goals with a plan.
No, I'm going to take your approach from now on. New Year's actionable items. That's what we're going to go with instead. Hey, we've got to cover just a little bit of news here. We were talking about how Assembly Speaker Robin Voss was interviewed on Capital City Sunday. He was asked many things, but one of them that I want to talk to you about is how he continues to say that he believes the votes are there amongst Assembly Republicans to keep the Wisconsin 1849 abortion ban in place, but with exceptions for rape and incest, which, you know, A, Governor Evers has said that's not nearly good enough. And B, I'm still not convinced that, you know, the Republican votes are there. What's your own crystal ball view on whether the legislature is going to do anything progressive for women's reproductive health rights?
Well, they won't. This is just a political football for them. You know, without this ban, Wisconsin was already, we have laws on the books that we were following that kept things in check the way that they wanted it to be. And this is that situation where the dog has caught the car, it's gone way too far, and now they're backpedaling and they're trying to figure out how to make this work in an environment where people want this right. This is really, we've pulled over and over and over again, and Wisconsinites want this ban to be repealed. So, I mean, he can talk all he wants, but the truth is the ban needs to go away. You can't modify this 1849 ban. Let me remind you, this ban was 70 years before women got the right to vote in this country. It's a year older than the state itself. This ban does not apply. It needs to just go away, and we need to go back to the way things were before and fight over those things instead of where we're at right now.
Yeah, there was some good writing. Matt Iglesias has a new column out about how, you know, Republicans were once the party of economic policy, but then to get to the economic policy, they had to basically wage these culture wars, but now they're entirely bogged down in them and don't really have an economic policy. And that, you know, again, the party is kind of stuck. And we may talk more about that a little later this morning, but we're going to take a break here, do this day in history, a little bit of music, if you don't mind, Dr. Lyerly.
Oh, I'm so excited. You know, I love this.
We'll be back right after this. You're up north.
I went and bought myself a ticket, and I sat down in the very first row. They pulled the curtain, but then when they turned the spotlight way down low.
You can be forgiven if you don't recognize this Elvis Presley song, but on this day in music history, 1965, Elvis had his eighth number one U.S. album chart hit with the soundtrack from the movie Roustabout. You're not familiar with it, Kristen?
No.
You know who is? Nobody. Because it was not anything of consequence. Reading up on this, it was the number one album for a time, starting this day in 1965, but there were 11 songs that were slapped together for 20 minutes of music. 11 songs, 20 minutes, because most of the songs are like a minute and a half, 2 minutes. Nothing that really got radio airplay except for that tune right there, Little Egypt, which is actually a remake of a 1962 hit from the Coasters. And the lyrics, I had to look them up. I'm like, what's this song, Little Egypt? The lyrics tell the story of a stripper with all kinds of flexibility talents and ends by saying she's now stuck doing the mopping and the shopping because she and the singer now have 7 kids. There's a happy tune for you.
Well, and they squeezed all that into less than 2 minutes, huh?
Well, that one's just over 2 minutes.
Yes, that was the closest they had to a big hit. It was Elvis's final soundtrack to reach number one and his last number one album until 1973 with the Aloha from Hawaii via satellite. Big doings there. Let's see, we have Roger Miller was born on this day in 1936. He passed away in 1991. Songs that included King of the Road and this one.
Make you want to holler, holly ho. Burns your tummy, don't you know? Chug-a-look, chug-a-look.
They just don't. They don't make music like that anymore, Kristen.
King of the Road. That voice. Yep.
This is the 85th birthday of Lynn Conway, an influential computer scientist who worked with IBM and Memorex and Xerox. She was fired from IBM in 1968, when she came out as transgender and then became a prominent transgender activist. So Lynn Conway turns 85 today. American composer and conductor Eric Whitaker is 53. It was on this day in 1971 that All Things Must Pass by George Harrison began a 7-week run at number one on the album charts. It was certified 7 times platinum and includes My Sweet Lord, the winner of the Grammy for 1972 Record of the Year, and What Is Life? All Things Must Pass was released as a triple album in November 1970. It was George Harrison's first solo work after the breakup of the Beatles earlier that year. And Kristen, the more I learn about Beatles history and what... Look, John and Paul were geniuses, but you had George Harrison, you know, with the Beatles. You had like Stevie Nicks with Fleetwood Mac. And I know there's other examples where people really want to get their song out and the rest of the group goes, oh, I don't know, maybe we'll get around to it. And, you know, then they finally put out a solo album and they go, this is good stuff. We probably should have used this in the group, huh?
Yeah, George was the youngest one, and I just don't think they took him all that seriously. And he wasn't doing a lot of the writing, and, you know, he kind of came late to the party because he was like 15 when he joined the other group that was all together. But yeah, the way he took on his own personality and adopted so many of the Indian themes and different different instruments, and he was truly brilliant. And What Is Life is maybe one of my favorite songs in the world. It's so bright.
It really was. I was really happy to find that one for this morning. And then finally, in 2010, Kesha's first single, TikTok, hit number one on the Hot 100 and stayed there for 9 weeks, making it the longest running chart topper of 2010.
Don't stop, make it pop, DJ.
Sorry, let me amend what I meant to say there. Kesha's first single, the remarkably forgettable TikTok, hit number one on this day.
You say that. I can never forget this song. I've heard it so many times. Not of my own choice, but...
I guess when I say forgettable, meaning I wish I could forget it.
There
it is, just bouncing its way around.
Maybe it belongs with the ball dropping on New Year's Eve, where we can maybe we don't need it anymore.
I like that. Yes, maybe that's the way that we need to go on this. Kristen, as often happens at the end of the year, it seems, it's right after they put together all of the obituary packages of people who passed away in the past year, and then they have to have some late additions. And last night, I wouldn't say I'm a huge Barbara Walters fan, but I am a fan of anything that talks about, you know, the history of television and news and, you know, the role of women in it. And so we watched the whole 2-hour ABC special on the life of Barbara Walters. And while obviously a lot of women in broadcasting and journalism are talking about her leadership role, I'm sure that I can talk to you. By the way, as I talk, I was going to mention mentorship and you know, blazing trails and such. But I'm going to interrupt my own question to say thank you for the Christmas gift of the Pat McBride book.
Oh, you're so welcome.
Which now, again, I'm a little off track, but talking about mentorship and people blazing trails, I just wondered if, you know, on the passing of Barbara Walters, if there were, you know, women who kind of helped clear the path for you and for my wife and all the others that followed going into medicine and going into OBGYN.
Well, OBGYN was, like all other aspects of medicine, dominated by men forever. But my class at the University of Wisconsin was the first more women than men class. So we really were starting to see the tide turn. And yeah, in OBGYN right now, our leadership is predominantly women. It's mostly women who are going into the field. And there have been so many mentors. I'm lucky, actually, one of my jobs right now, I'm working with one of the leaders and one of the trailblazers in my field. And I feel so incredibly blessed to be able to do that and take the torch from her. So yeah, so many people. And how important is mentorship, both for us and for us to recognize and share, you know, with younger generations?
Especially when the folks before us, well, let me say the folks before you, in many cases, like Barbara Walters, was told just to do the women's stories, the fashion stories. And while she did that while also pushing to do more things. And, you know, there was once a time where women would sometimes look at a female doc, a primary care doc, and say, well, I don't know about that.
It still happens. It still happens when you're talking to somebody about surgery and you get to the point where you're like, so are we ready to schedule your surgery? And they're like, yes, where's my surgeon? and I say, well, we've been talking about this for 30 minutes. I will do your surgery. But it's still, I think, hard for people to put that in their mind. And that's the beauty of Barbara Walters. Her approach was so different and so gentle. I think she was able to pull things out of people that other interviewers weren't able to access. And it was in part because she's a woman.
And well, that gets us into something we don't have time for. But again, just that whole bedside manner, taking a patient's history, getting them to open up and talk to you. Those communication skills are so important. But anyway, Kristen, thanks so much for starting off the week. And we'll probably talk to you Thursday morning, I would imagine.
Happy 2023. We'll be back.
All right. Thanks, Kristen. Talk to you later. In our next hour, Melissa Agard. Except you, Wisconsin Rapids. You're leaving us now. You have a great day. You're up north.